So we have a short parsha this week, and very short aliyahs, especially. This first aliyah is only three psukim. So you might think, okay, how much can we talk about for three psukim? You will be surprised. So let's see if we can get it all in the time that we have, to talk about the Rishon of even just Nitzavim. And the fact that it's just Nitzavim is itself striking, because how exactly we come up with the decision of what parshios to combine and what parshios to separate seems to be a little bit surprising, because here we have two such short parshios to separate them and then combine others. It's hard to understand exactly, are we trying to have Rachmanis on the Baal Koreh or not? To what extent do we calculate how long the laning is going to be in terms of these cheshbonos? That's itself a question. But especially when it comes to Nitzavim Vayelech, there is a tradition from the Eshkol and the Vilna Gaon, that's recorded in this context as well, that understand that Nitzavim Vayelech are really one parsha. Really, they're not meant to be separated. So all the more so to single out Nitzavim here is a surprising call. And Tosfos Maseches Bava Basra and Daf Peches and Mibbeis, Tosfos quotes the view of Rav Nissim Gaon that the purpose of the schedule is that we want to make sure to have Nitzavim before Rosh Hashanah, because we want to take all of the klalos of Parshas Kisavo and leave them in the previous year. Say, Tichlo Shana V'Kilo says, as the Ri explains, the klalos are in Kisavo, and Parshas Nitzavim is here to be mafsik. But maybe it's more than that. It's more than just having a hefsik. Because, you know, the point here is that we could have just had Nitzavim after Rosh Hashanah and still had Kisavo beforehand and left all the klalos there. But we specifically want to insert Nitzavim before Rosh Hashanah in order to be mafsik, and presumably it's more than that. And in the Paras Yosef Acharas, she quotes from the Gerer Sheshiv Rav Yitzchak Fleshker, the author of the Shaar Yitzchak, and there are others who make a similar point, that perhaps the message here is not just that we want to create some space between the Kolos and the next year, but there's something that has to happen in order to create a new environment, and that is the notion of Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kuchem, the Achdus that is suggested by the opening psukim. That's a crucial theme in order to help bring about a new year. It's an idea that you find in a number of places. Further by Simon Shlita has an essay here in Emre Baruch, where he also quotes similar ideas from different sources. And it's very much a crucial theme as we go into the Yom Na'arayim. And it's worth discussing. Maybe we'll go into this more a little bit next week. But the obligation of asking Mechila before Yom Kippur is the one do-or-die mitzvah of Tishrei and Elul, that as much as we have so many crucial mitzvahs, but the only one that the Mishnah says, this is going to blow the whole thing if you don't do it, and if you don't ask for Mechila, so you're not going to get a kapara. So there are many different explanations of that, and again, maybe we'll have the opportunity to get into a little bit more, but many explain that to get the kapara of this season, we need achdus, we need to have a sense of unity, and if we are b'machlokas with each other, if we're in a state of rift, because we have offended each other, because we've done averos ben adam l'chavero, so then Yom Kippur is not going to be able to function unless we seek out that mechila. So it's a crucial theme of the Yom Tovim, of Yom Na'arayim, and perhaps that's one of the main themes of having Nitzavim here specifically read before Rosh Hashanah in order to make that point. But also to maybe counterbalance it, Rav Nosson Gestetner in a Sefer on Chumash has a point that maybe needs to be weighed together with that, that if we look, if we break our rule for a second and we look at the further aliyahs, so we look at the third aliyah, so the Torah talks about somebody who decides he's going to just do whatever he wants, and he's going to say that v'sbarech v'uvavol emor shalom yeli. And then the next pasuk continues, lo yov Hashem slach lo. So the Laharis Nassim suggests that this is a picture of somebody who's trying to cynically manipulate this idea, that we know that shalom creates kapara, that achdus is something that can help us get past our negative history. But what if somebody figures, okay, so I'll just plan that out l'chachil, I'll do whatever I want, and I'll say, shalom yeli, so I'll be a man of shalom that will allow me to squeak past regardless of what I do. So to that it says, lo yov Hashem shloach lo. You can't cynically manipulate this plan. It's got to be something that is real, that achdus is a mechaper, but it's not a priori plan that, okay, I'll do whatever I want, and I will try to manipulate this as a cover-up. That's not going to work. But the idea that Klal Yisrael has to have a sense of unity, that's very crucial for a lot of reasons to anticipate Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Further, the idea of putting Nitzavim before the new year, there is a connection to the previous parsha. As the Netziv points out, that this is part of the Tochacha, it's really the pius from the Tochacha, it's the kamas down, as Rashi suggests, and we'll talk about in a second, that we've heard some pretty harsh things in Parshas Kisavo, so we don't want to be left hanging, because, maybe literally, because the message is one that's very scary. So this Parsha gives us a little bit of relief, but it also has its own inherent importance, so that it suggests that on the one hand it's a continuation from the Tochacha, but on the other hand, it's its own theme, so it has to be stood alone. Rashi and Pasuk Beis, again, to cheat a little bit at the beginning of the next Aliyah, but Rashi makes the point that Moshe Rabbeinu was kind of calming the Jews down, saying, okay, you heard all these scary things, but, all right, you're still alive, you're still standing here, so it's going to be okay. Sternbach, in his Sefer Tam Vidas al Torah, so poses the question, you know, is this undermining the message of Tocha, saying, well, you know, the Tocha is here, but look, doesn't seem to hurt you too much. So he notes that presumably the message is one message for the Klal, one message for the Yechidim, that the Klal is going to survive, the Jewish people are going to make it, but if the individuals want to be a part of that survival, then they have to worry about how they fit within this picture. And he quotes a mashal about a sinking ship, and there are some people who are working to try to keep it afloat and try to move it to safety, and some have abandoned the ship. So they're all at risk, but the ones who are sticking with the ship and trying to bring it to safety, so if it does indeed succeed in getting there, so these are the ones who are going to be a part of that Yeshua. And here we have a havtacha that the Jewish people as a whole will endure, and we're told that we have to do what we can to make sure we're a part of that positive future.
Who said that?
Our Sternbuch adds that onto that point to this Rashi. Our Shamshon Fal Hirsch, in his comments here, so he notes that the theme of the parasha in relation to the Tochacha and the bris that's referred to here, a very crucial theme, that this covenant and the discussion of the covenant, that the Torah wants to head off any misunderstandings about the scope of the bris. So it goes through the psukim here in the beginning of Nitzavim, how each one is targeted towards a potential misunderstanding. And specifically about our Aliyah, about these first three psukim, that's to target the idea that somebody might think that it only applies to some people, it only applies in some situations. So we're going to great lengths here to include everybody, to make it clear that this is not a limited bris, but this is for the entire klal. That theme that the parsha here is addressing possible excuses. So this could maybe go to explain something else. And there's discussion about this in the Sefer Chavetz Sashar, and he makes a suggestion along these lines. Maybe he doesn't quote the verse, but he makes a suggestion along these lines. This whole reference to a bris. So we have three brisos. We have Sinai, and we have Ol Moed, and we have here. So are these three repeated brisos, or is one replacing the other? So the Gemara in Maseches Sota, it sounds like there's cumulative. Right? The Gemara says that every mitzvah has three brisos that are sealed regarding it. But the Midrash Tanchuma, it sounds like this is a renewing of the bris, because maybe the Chet HaEgel canceled it. That the rejection and the Jews did, that the Egel is the new God, the rejection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So maybe that was a abrogation of the bris, and now the bris needs to be reasserted in a stronger way. So which is it? Is the first bris still there, or is this a new bris that replaces the old bris? So there might be some element, and again, this is a point that he discusses, that a Stipler, in his commentary to Chumash in the Berakhos Peretz, has a comment based on the Gemara Maseches Nedarim. The Gemara Maseches Nedarim poses the question of the status of a neder to learn. Normally the rule is, or really the language should really be a shvua, even though the Gemara has language of neder there also, that if a person takes a shvua that he's going to uphold the Torah, or he's going to contradict the Torah. If the shvua affects the Torah one way or another, either positively or negatively, so the rule is the shvua does not take effect. And we say that you cannot be, you can't create a shvua on top of a shvua. So when it comes to the Torah, the whole Torah is already a shvua. We're mushpav yomei v'har Sinai. So if you want to take another shvua, you say I'm going to eat matzah on Pesach. That shvuah is not going to be chal, because that's already part of the existing Torah. And if you want to take a shvuah, you're going to eat chametz on Pesach to contradict the Torah. It's also not going to be chal. It doesn't touch the existing commitments. So the Gemara says that nonetheless, if somebody makes a commitment, he's going to learn a certain section of the Torah. Neder gadol neder l'elokei Yisrael. It's a good neder. So the Gemara asks, mushpav yomei v'har Sinai. How could that be effective? So one of the answers the Gemara gives, the other one is, we'll open up a whole other discussion for a different time, but one answer the Gemara gives is, you see from here, the shari leile inish lezruzei nafshe, that it's legitimate for a person to try to motivate himself and take on this extra shvua, apparently, even though it's not really effective. So you could ask, what's the point? If the shvua isn't going to make a difference, so then where is this resource there? How is this going to be a motivating factor if it's not adding anything? So the person takes on an extra commitment, so that's a motivation, but if the commitment is not changing at all, so what does this do to it? So he explains that this is a psychological yisod. Says that very often people don't live up to their obligations, because they convince themselves that the obligation is not really relevant to them. It's not actually something they have to do. So to that, he says, that's what this is coming to address. Because miman efshach, if you believe you're obligated, so then your initial obligation should keep you in line. And if you don't think you're obligated, so then okay, so then the shvuah can take effect, because it's not... So it's there kind of to fill in the holes that are missing. So maybe there's a similar structure here, that really the original bris is in effect. But just in case anyone should think that there's anything that excludes them from the bris, so then this parsha is coming to reinforce that. So miman efshach, really all the bris are still there. But to whatever extent there's any havamina, that there's a need for a new bris, so then that's what this comes to address. Okay, could be. But in any event, so to get into the psukim themselves, so the first pasuk says, Atem nitzavim hayom kulchem lefnei Hashem elokeichem, rasheichem, shivteichem, zikneichem v'shatreichem, v'kol ish Yisrael. So this reference to your standing here today, so what is today? So there's a difference between Rashi and the Ramban and their understandings of this. The Ramban understands that this is all the previous Maimed, what we were reading about in Kisavo. So this is a flow from that. While Rashi has it differently, Rashi understands that this was its own gathering. You see, the first Rashi, Malamed Shekinsa Moshe Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Yomoso L'Achnisan B'Vris, that he gathered them together again. This was its own Maimed. The language of Nitzavim, so Rav Hirsch writes that Nitzav is different than Omeid. you're standing here, but you're not stam standing. It means you're standing firmly. You say yatziv v'kaya, person is standing with strength, and it's consistent with the point we said before that even though there's been a lot, you've gone through a lot, but you're still standing, you're still firm, and that experience of having gone through a lot is going to make you stronger, is going to contribute to the firmness because you have endured. So that is a factor of why you're so strong. It's a factor of why you are here. But also to contribute to the appropriateness of reading this parasha this week, so there are many who understand that there's a remez here to Rosh Hashanah. Hayom is the day, even though the day, as far as Masechtas are concerned, is Yom Kippur, but the day of Rosh Hashanah, Rosh, the day that begins the whole year. This is an idea that Panei Acharaz has, one of the Bali Atosfos, and in the later Svarim, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe and the Likutei Torah. Rav Zevin has a discussion about this in his Sefer of Short Comments on Chumash, that many understand that there is this reference to the day that controls the whole year, and that there's a message here. Rabbi Simon has a lot about this in his Sefer as well. Another reference there. And Rav Zevin notes that along the lines similar to Rav Hirsch, that we're standing up straight. That should be our attitudes on Rosh Hashanah. And as the Panei Acharaza writes, that's perhaps evocative of the fact that we are judged, and we say that everyone goes in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu Kivnei Maron. So here, Hayom, on this day, we are standing. We are being recognized and we're being judged. And it should be good. And when we list the people, we say, Hayom Kulchem, and then we start listing different categories of people. So the Laharos Nosson writes that this is to reflect the fact that there are different ways a person can be judged. A person can be judged as an individual, and he can also be judged in relation to others. And it gives different perspectives. We know that beginning of Parshas Noach, we're told that Noach was assessed one way as an individual, assessed differently when compared to everyone else. And each gives a crucial perspective because we are influenced by those who are around us. And that impacts on how this assessment is made. So in order to have a fair sense of judgment in Rosh Hashanah, we recognize that we're standing there both as individuals and also as people who are neighbors and friends and relatives and who are affected, and both of them should be factored in. And we'll say more about that in a minute. The Netziv also notes that these different categories reflect the fact that everybody has their own set of nisyonos and everybody has their own set of challenges and questions and issues, and therefore we have to identify all the different types of groups and life stages and categories that are a part of the message here, that are part of what's being addressed. It's interesting that it says, Roshechem, Shivtechem, Ziknechem, Veshotrechem. So apparently the leaders, the Roshim, are mentioned before the Zekanim, and the Zekanim we understand are the Talmidei Chachamim. So one might think, as Kavod HaTorah, he should mention the Zekanim first. And it's contrasted with the Sefer Yehoshua and Parachot Dalet. So there you find indeed Zekanim are mentioned first. So the Yerushalmi in the end of Maseches Horius, you know, where there's that whole discussion of who gets saved first and the like. So the Yerushalmi discusses why it is that Moshe, as opposed to Yehoshua, why does Moshe mention the leaders before the Zekanim? And the Yerushalmi gives a couple of different approaches, gives like four distinctions, why it is that Moshe did it one way and Yehoshua did it another way. But among them, he says, the Yerushalmi says, that Moshe was looking towards the future and he knew the Jews would be in Galus, and they would need very much the leadership of the Roshim. That would be a big part of how they survive the Galus. So it doesn't mean they don't need the Talmidei Chachamim, but it calls attention to the important role of those who are involved in the Tzorach Yitzibor in a different capacity. And Sternbach in the Tan Vidas notes that they have to be informed of their sense of responsibility and also of the schar for that role. So Moshe is giving them priorities, mentioning them first in order to help convey that. It's interesting also that Zayin Latorah, the Litzker Rav, notes that all of these categories have to be listed separately because an individual is only responsible for himself. So when he takes upon a commitment, so then that's limited. When somebody has a tribe under him or has students or has a family, so what he accepts takes on additional qualities to it because he's also responsible for everything that happens for all of those people. So that becomes a huge part of it also. So we can't mention them all and with one word because we have to call attention to the fact that there are these different levels and it's going to impact on the nature of the Kabbalah. It's something different. This next pasuk begins, Tapchem Nesheichem. So it sounds like that means the children and the women. So why are the children mentioned before the women? When we talk about Hakel, we'll see soon, so the Nashim are mentioned before the Taf. So there's a lot of discussion about this. If you look in Emes LeYaakov or Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, he goes through, first of all, just trying to figure out what the word Taf really means. Does Taf here mean literally children? Does it mean young adults? Does it mean those who are above 13? Does it mean those who are much younger? In the context of Hakel, it sounds like it means very little children because the Gemara asks, what's the point when it comes to Hakel? Why do we bring the little children who don't know what's going on? And the Gemara says, "Retain schar l'mivayehem," that there's some kind of benefit for the adults. It's a whole discussion of itself. But why here, Taf mentioned first? So, as Nayim Latorah discusses, that maybe we're talking about the Kabbalah for the Bris, so we want to order it in terms of those who are chayiv and more mitzvos, so the Nashim are pater from some of the mitzvos. And the Taf are pater from all mitzvos if they're ketanim, but they're going to be chayiv in all the mitzvos. So we're trying to talk about the future here, so it's relevant to instruct them as well. So he says, so therefore, if we're counting mitzvos, maybe it makes sense that the Taf should be mentioned first. But in the context of Hakel, so we're looking at where they're at right now and what they're going to experience. So the women are going to understand the content of the Hakel, while the children aren't. They're just there to accomplish this goal of Litain Schar L'Mivayehem, whatever that means. So it's a topic for a different drasha, but they're not understanding, while the Nashim are understanding. So there, it makes sense that the Nashim should be mentioned first. It's also very striking. Rav Hirsch has a fascinating comment here, where he says, Tapchem Nesheichem is really one phrase, and Rasheichem Shivteichem is really one phrase. That essentially, we're calling reference to the point we mentioned before, that a man is not an island, that everybody is affected by their context, and who influences them and who they're responsible for. So we say, Rasheichem Shivteichem, the leaders of the tribes, the leaders are the tribes, the qualities of the tribes are reflected in the leader and impact upon the leader. And also, we say tapchem, the children. So you want to assess the children, you can't do that without their parents, without their mothers, without the nesheichem. You're not going to have any understanding of what they are or how they've gotten to this point. So that's a crucial part of this assessment. That's got to be mentioned together. It's also a very fascinating point. So then the pasuk goes on to say, mechotei beitzecha ad shoev mimecha, that we're including everybody from all the different professions, whether you are a wood chopper or whether you are a water drawer. So it doesn't sound like it's such a gamut. You know, nowadays you tell somebody you could be anything from a wood chopper to a water drawer. It doesn't sound like it's such a range. Some suggest that Shoev Mimecha is unskilled labor. It doesn't really take much training to draw water. But to chop wood safely, that takes more care, more training. It refers to different levels here. Homiletically, Rav Zevin has in his Sefer that he suggests if we're looking towards tshuva here, so we recognize the fact that there are different approaches to tshuva. There's a positive approach to tshuva and a negative approach to tshuva. So chotei beitzecha, the one who's chopping up things, is breaking things. So that's essentially bottom-up tshuva. You're basically saying, okay, everything here has been problematic, and we need to break it and start afresh, and start anew. While shoev meimecha, the imagery is one draws in water, and ein mayim melatora, that's top-down tshuva, somebody who's inspired by the potential and the content of the Torah to grow positively. That's a very different message. And this is evocative of the concept that we have of tshuva me'ava and tshuva me'ira. That we know that, I think we made reference to this in one of the previous weeks, and it's a major theme in Parshas Nitzavim. To go on to the Elias, the theme of tshuva, there's a lot really to say about this. But the Gemara tells us that there's one level of tshuva, where it's called tshuva meira, tshuva is motivated by reverence, and that is effective to cancel out your averus. That zidonos shelo nasos kishkagos, that your intentional averus are as like they were unintentional. But there's a greater koach tshuva that does more than that. That zidonos shelo nasos lo kizachios, that your intentional misdeeds are actually treated like a zchus. And that's pretty amazing. So the Gemara says that's beyond tshuva meira. That is tshuva me'ahava. That's tshuva that is motivated by love. So it's a good question what that means, practically speaking. And if we can cheat a little bit and look to further psukim later on in this parsha. So some suggest that this is indicated by the often quoted pasuk, "Ha mitzvah hazos lo neflesi," that this mitzvah is not beyond you. So some point out that there is somewhat of a contradiction, perhaps, that the Gemara Maseches Erevin suggests that that mitzvah, "Ki ha mitzvah hazos," what's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is Talmud Torah. But many of the Rishonim over here understand that it's a reference to tshuva. The parasha tells us, "V'shavta Hashem Elokecha." So, which one is it? Is it tshuva or is it Talmud Torah? So, they quote in the name of Rav Aaron Cutler that he says the answer is both. That Talmud Torah can be a method of tshuva. That this might be the answer to the question: how do you get this mysterious tshuva me'ahava? If the Gemara says tshuva me'ava is so powerful it can turn your averus into mitzvos, so that's very tantalizing. What do you? How do you do it? The Minchas Chinuch suggests there's even more. There's an additional component to tshuva me'ava, because Chazal tell us there are chiluke kapara, that there are different categories of atonement, and that for bigger averus you need more. You need Yisurin, you need Yom Kippur, it's not just tshuva. So the Menachas Chinuch says that's if it's tshuva meira. But tshuva me'ava is more powerful, that can leapfrog over all the chiluki kapar. So that's pretty amazing. So what is tshuva me'ava? So there are those who suggest, based on this quote of Rav Aaron Cutler and others, that tshuva me'ira, that's the standard tshuva, where we talk about charata and vidui and kabbalah lasin, all of those components. But when we talk about tshuva me'ava, that's Talmud Torah. And the understanding is that they share a path, that tshuva me'ava means somebody loves God and is looking to come closer to Him. And Talmud Torah is how you come closer to God. And the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva describes that the person who has sinned has created a distance between himself and God. So therefore, he wants to bridge that gap. He wants to fix that distance. So how do you do it? Well, you could try to erase the cause of the distance, the sin. Or you could also, or maybe at the same time, you could try to fill in the space. So Talmud Torah is a way of doing that, is a way of bringing yourself closer. And therefore, that's essentially what Tshuva Me'ava is. The believer of salvation can explain that the idea that your averus are turned into shkagos in the case of Tshuva Me'ira, but in the case of Tshuva Me'ava, they're turned into zachios, into good things. So that reflects the two different attitudes a person can have towards personal growth. Now, one can say, all right, I've made mistakes, but I want to run away from them. I want to separate myself from them and have nothing to do with them anymore. So that's Tshuva Me'ira. You just want to kind of distance yourself from the past. And if that's what you're looking for, okay, so that's effective. So you get a new slate, everything's wiped clean, and your zidonos are like shkagos. They're like they never happened. They're not held against you. They're not your problem. While there's another attitude also that one could say, listen, I have made a lot of mistakes, but I can learn from the mistakes, and I can become somebody much greater than I would have been otherwise had I not made these mistakes. And I can be pushed forward from these lessons and this experience. So if that's the attitude a person takes, that's Tshuva Me'ava, so then it makes sense that he's going to have this special benefit of Zachios coming from his Zidonos, because he's actually turning them into the tools of goodness. They're actually a engine for positive things. So it makes sense that they become a part of the Zachios. So maybe that's similar. What Zevin is saying here, that there is the Chotei Beitzecha approach, or there is the Shoev Memecha approach. So all of this, again, is consistent with the idea that we're speaking on two levels here, that we're talking about the bris overall, and that we're talking about Rosh Hashanah imagery. And this is all appealing to the individuals to recognize that the bris and the din of Rosh Hashanah is relevant to all of us, doesn't matter who you are. But it's also relevant uniquely to all of us, that each one has his mission to fulfill, has his unique chelek in what the bris is, and you should appreciate what you're capable of. And going into Rosh Hashanah, we spoke last week, or earlier this week, about the idea of simcha in Rosh Hashanah, that a person should have some sense of confidence in the process, and how we hope that it turns out well. So you should have confidence in your potential. You should recognize that you are a unique individual who can contribute something no one else can, and we need you here. So make sure to step up to the plate and to recognize that that's the mission that Rosh Hashanah is asking of you, to figure out how you can carry out that mission and who you can be. And this Klal Yisrael message here is, for a number of reasons, very, very crucial to us as we lay this before Rosh Hashanah. That's another reason why this is a message that we need to have going into Rosh Hashanah. So the last of the three psukim in this aliyah, it's a very packed three psukim. So the last pasuk tells us, La'avracha b'vris Hashem Elokecha v'alaso, Asher Hashem Elokecha karei simcha hayom. So here we are passing into this new bris, and it has the enforcement, it has a covenant, and it has a curse, so to speak, if it's not going to be fulfilled. And the Rishonim explain, well, the Psukim really indicate that we need this kind of heavy-handed message because we have been exposed to a lot of bad things. As the third Aliyah, the Pasuk can say, V'atiru eshikutzeim v'eshkulehem. We've seen all of the idolatry of the nations that we've interacted with. So this has an impact, this has an effect, and Rav Simcha Zussel Breud has a whole essay about this. And the Sefer Samdara Chalatorah and Parshat Nitzavim has a whole essay about, you see that our environment is always relevant and can always have an impact. And a very negative environment, even once you're removed from it by a long time, you don't know what kind of a subtle, perhaps subconscious, impact it's having. So therefore, it's especially important that we are reminded of just how powerful that is, and that's why this heavy-handed approach is required here. But also, Rav Hirsch notes that we say, La'avracha, we don't say, B'vo'echa, we don't say that we're bringing you into a covenant, but you are passing through into a covenant. And it says that idea of kind of passing over is meant to reflect the fact that it's not something that you can just say, okay, I'll take this together with everything else. We have to recognize that we are going into a whole new world with this, and we're leaving all of the bad stuff behind. And Avracha may evoke Passover, but it's more relevant for Rosh Hashanah here. We're saying that as we go into this new covenant, we have to recognize that that's going to require us to make a complete commitment and a complete switch, and to not hold on to all the negativities of the past. The Kli Yakar and others note that the language changes to singular. So here we were talking about plural formulations in the beginning. And now, by this pasuk, by this third pasuk, it's L'avrucha b'vris Hashem Elokecha. So, you as an individual. So, why is it individual language? So, as he notes, that the theme that's coming up now is the theme of Arvus, or Arivus, depending on how you pronounce it. The idea of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebazah, that all of us are interconnected. And that is a part of this covenant. That's a crucial element of this covenant. The idea that through this agreement, we become one entity. And the psukim that continue are going to address this more specifically. So I guess that will have to wait for future years. But the notion of interpersonal responsibility is a major theme of what we're reading here. And that's a very significant shift. Essentially, we're saying we're not individuals anymore, but that everything affects the klal, and we become a part of that. And this has halachic ramifications as well as philosophical ramifications. So kind of the negative side, it has the idea of tochacha, the idea that we have to try to set people the proper path if we see them acting in a way that is not productive and is not helpful. And also we try to help out with mitzvos. So the Gemara derives a halachic principle from the concept of arvus that is built on to the theme of Shemaya Ka'ona. Shemaya Ka'ona exists without this, but this is an extra aspect of it. That we know that, let's say you want to fulfill a mitzvah on behalf of somebody else, you want to make kiddush for them, or you want to read the Megillah for them. So the rule is, you can only do that if you are also chayiv in the mitzvah, and chayiv at the same level as the person who is listening to you. So in order to make kiddush for somebody else, you have to be chayiv in kiddush. So Gemara asks, well, if you already heard Kiddush, so then you shouldn't be able to still do this, because you're not obligated anymore. You have to be obligated, and you're not obligated to hear Kiddush twice. But the Gemara says, no, we say, Af al pi sheyotza motzi, that even though somebody already was yotze, nonetheless, he still is empowered to be motzi others. And because of this principle of arevus, because this idea that Kol Yisrael Arevim, that as soon as we establish that somebody is technically obligated in the mitzvah, even if he's not functionally obligated right now because he already did it, but for our purposes he is obligated, because if there's somebody else who needs him to help fulfill the mitzvah, so because we're all responsible for each other, that creates chiyuv. And so therefore, if you already heard the shofar, you can blow the shofar for others. If you already read the Megillah, you can read the Megillah for others, because you're still considered obligated, functionally even, because of this idea of arevus. I think Rav Shach explained that the reason that we don't have chazaras hashatz for Ma'ariv is because the institution of chazaras hashatz is lahotzi esheino baki, is to daven on behalf of those who can't daven for themselves. So it's working off the premise that there is this responsibility. So even though the Shliach Tzibur already said Shmoneh Esrei, but he said Shmoneh Esrei again to help out those who have an obligation they can't do on their own. But the Gemara says that Tfilas Arvus is a Rishus. it's not technically an obligation for whatever purposes that means. So if it's not an obligation that people have, so then we're not going to have a concept of arvus that's going to justify doing it again. But in any event, this notion of interpersonal responsibility is a very, very crucial topic, and it has an impact halachically, but also hashgafically for sure, and broadly in addition to specifically. So it calls attention to the fact that no man is an island, and certainly no Jew is an island, and everything that we do affects everyone else. And we have to have that constantly at our forefront. It's interesting, so we spoke recently about mummer and categories of those who defy the values of the community. And it's important to appreciate that from two directions. And on the one hand, from the negative direction, so somebody who is acting in a way that's contradictory to the Torah's values, or advocating positions that are contradictory to the Torah's values. So that has an impact on everyone else. Nothing exists in a vacuum. No one is an island. And that's why there is such a great concern. So on the one hand, one might take that to say, okay, so we have to be stronger against those who are acting in such a fashion. But at the same time, we could come to the opposite conclusion and think about the language of the Chazon Ish that we saw when we were involved in that sugya, and his focus on drawing people in through love, and how whatever anybody is not understanding properly, it's not necessarily their fault. They are not being given the whole picture, and it's our obligation to draw them in with bonds of love. So there also, and essentially Sternbach has a comment along these lines in the Tambadas also, that you might say, all right, so if he's completely outside the klal, so he's not my problem. And maybe the message is that we have to see everybody as part of the klal and recognize that where they are losing out, we're all losing out. And therefore, we have a greater sense of responsibility to do whatever we can to make sure people are brought back in a positive way, which essentially is what the Chazon Ish was getting at in that comment. So it's a very important theme as we look towards Rosh Hashanah, and as this parsha is purposely, as we've seen, put here before Rosh Hashanah, to recognize that we function in a communal environment, and that everything we do affects everyone else, and we try to live up to our commitments and to recognize that to whatever extent there is a weakness or there is a lack of commitment, so then that affects everybody around us. And as we hope for a successful Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we recommit to this idea, to not just seeing ourselves as individuals, as important as that is, but to recognize how we affect everyone around us, and to make sure that our behavior reflects that sense of responsibility and that sense of awareness, and to have that extra push that even when we might think a certain action or inaction might be justified, it may be that it's theoretically justified, but if it's going to have a negative impact on the klal as a whole, it's very important to be able to appreciate that and have that provide that extra push. So as we look towards Rosh Hashanah, it's clearly a part of all of these messages that we've seen, really everything that is embedded in this Aliyah, that we seek to appreciate our role as part of a klal, as part of a group, on all the different levels that we are a part of a group. We're all parts of families, we're parts of a yeshiva, we're parts of shiurim, we're parts of environments that are defined in many different ways. And everything that we do has an impact on that environment. So just like the environment has an impact on us, like was mentioned a few minutes ago, but the reverse is also certainly true. And it would seem like a major Kabbalah a person can make for Rosh Hashanah is to bring a heightened awareness to that, and how everything that they do impacts on the tzibur around them. And that's ultimately a good thing, even though it is a achrayus. And to be reminded of that achrayus is important. And we can't do anything by ourselves. We certainly can't do everything by ourselves. So we need to be connected in order to really fulfill our collective mission. And you know, there's a medrash that says that when it comes to mitzvos, so we're not told that we have to chase after a mitzvah. If the mitzvah is here, we're obligated, we have to do it. And if not, we don't have an obligation to chase after it. But when it comes to shalom, the pasuk says in Tehillim, Bakesh shalom v'rifehu. So you see that shalom you have to chase after. Mitzvos you don't have to chase after. So some explain, I remember I once saw the sefer Zivchei Shlomo, it explains that no individual is able to do all the mitzvahs of the Torah. No individual is chayiv in all the mitzvahs of the Torah by himself. So there are parts of mitzvahs that we're not connected to. Don't get to do them. But the truth is we do, because if we're part of the whole tzibur, so when the tzibur fulfills everything, that's relevant to us as individuals also. So that's why we're not told we have to chase after mitzvos, because nobody's obligated in everything, and if you're not obligated in one mitzvah, I guess somebody else is. And because they're fulfilling it, so that connects to you. But that's only true if there is achdus in Klal Yisrael, if we feel this connection, then we're able to make such a claim. So that's what the Medrash is getting at, that we're not obligated to chase after mitzvos because others in Klal Yisrael will do them, but we are obligated to chase after shalom, because that's what we need in order to allow that to be effective, in order to make sure that this collective impact is actually going to take place. So it's a crucial message as we approach Rosh Hashanah and throughout the Aseres Mechuvah. Like we said before, there is a mitzvah, there's an obligation to seek mechila, to make sure that we're on good terms with everyone, and overall, to give a lot of thought, Hayom Nitzavim, Tem Nitzavim, Hayom Kulchem, as we stand on the day of Rosh Hashanah in front of the Ribono Shalom, to think about what we can do to earn more opportunities. And feeling a greater sense of achrayus to the klal is, like we know in many different contexts in life, one reason why a person should have more opportunities, because he's taking on responsibilities towards others, or reflecting responsibilities towards others. So it's another aspect of being plugged into this mentality of being a part of Klal Yisrael, and to recognize all our different roles as family members, as yeshiva students, as members of a shir, as members of a group of any kind, and to really redouble our commitment to make sure that this awareness is harnessed and turned into something fantastic. So I wish everyone a ksiva v'chsima tova. It should be a very effective and positive Rosh Hashanah, and it should, through all of its efforts, collectively and as individuals, bring us to where we want to be for the year ahead. All right, I should have Shana Tova.